Whoa, you went no contact with your family? Like, you don't talk to them at all? Nope, because they're toxic as fuck. Are you also the villain for walking away from your toxic family in order to preserve your peace? Welcome to the Character Outs podcast, where I am on a mission to normalize going no contact with toxic family. Welcome, all you terrible people. Let's talk about it. Welcome back to the Character Outs podcast. My name is Terry. I'm so happy you're here, and I am so excited, jumping out of my skin, to finally have this guest on my podcast. She has just had a really special place in my heart. We've been connected on Instagram, and I feel like, you know, it sounds funny because it's, oh, it's just social media, it's just Instagram, right? But like, I feel like you, when you connect with someone, you connect with someone, whether it's on social media or in real life, like you connect with people. And this girl, I so connected with her on such a soul level. And we just joke, and I just always refer to her as, you know, my little sister. And I'm just so excited. I've watched her grow and be this badass bitch. So I'm just so excited for you to meet her and talk to her and hear your story. And as with every episode, I am hearing the story with you. So I know bits and pieces, but I don't know everything. But I'm just going to go ahead and read her bio, which made me cry, and I hope I can get through it without crying again. So here we go. Well, hello. My name is Afton. That is my name. She is in me, but I go by Raya. I am 33, a mother, a fiance, a big sister, and the chosen one from my ancestors for whatever reason to be the trauma breaker. Well, shit, here we are now. I have been low contact with my biological mom since January 2023. I gave it that year and I had to let go. Right now, I am a mother, a fiance, a sister, best friend for life, and truly she is mine. Currently, I am disabled fully. That in itself has been very hard to endure. There are many parts of me, many stories, many lives. It took losing my father in the end of 2021 to really open my eyes. Last year was my year to face all my truths from our truly brainwashed reality under a veil. This year, I have found my voice, and slowly I have been using that. I have been on a deep mental health and spiritual journey. I am finding Raya while healing Afton. Advocacy is my main goal in life. My son shows me every day I am doing something right. This is my story. And she ends with a quote, "You have no idea what it took for me to look at you and feel nothing." I so resonate with that quote. Welcome to the podcast. Did I say your name right? Raya or Raya?
It's Raya.
Raya. Okay. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
Raya's pretty too. Yeah. Raya actually, it was what I wanted to name my daughter if I ever had a daughter. Didn't happen for me, you know, but honestly, it's just how it is, right? I have a wonderful son. He's 10 years old and he is my being. He is my reason. And I just try to be a better person every day because of him, truly. And my little sister.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Excuse the cat who found the loudest toy in the house right now during our interview.
I'm like, look at the cat tree back there.
My cat came back. She's like, oh, you're going to need a cat lover. Can I come? Yeah, seriously. You can see. So, Raya, this is your story. Oh my gosh. I can't even handle. This is your story. I am so honored that you chose my podcast to share your story. I'm so proud of you for being so brave, and I'm so excited and also with a heavy heart because I know it's a doozy. You've been through a lot, even the small amount that you have told me. So where do you want to start? Why don't you tell me about
how we got here?
I mean, there's no way. You pick a starting point for me. Where,
you know,
you,
my mom, is really the starting point. You know, Nettie, she is the starting point. And you know, I like I've said, you know, so mom comes out, right? And especially I've noticed more obviously when I'm talking about my, specific events, and which more so become honestly selves. In a lot of my story, we'll explain this, and I am very open about this because there's such a stigma against it. I have borderline personality disorder, and I also have covert narc tendencies with some other things, but I am very honest about this, right? But I've been on my healing journey for quite some time, you know, diagnosed by bipolar at 18, BPD finally about 6 years ago. And then really just deep diving into a lot of things. And then, that's a big part of my finding myself. And so, as I've said, letting go of her was letting go of Afton. It truly was.
How was your mother with the BPD and diagnosis? Did she shame you for it? Did she?
The bipolar, and this was a big part of it. My mental health was never taken care of. And you know how you always hear, like, I did my best. We didn't know about mental health back then. Okay, I am 33. I was born in 1990. By the time we go into this story, that's not an excuse, right? And especially knowing our family. And so, but my mental health was just, it was denied, or like she didn't understand it. And, a lot of things were put on my dad because the mental health was more seen on that side, on the outside. In the end, you know, especially after the divorce. And so I don't know, the doctor that literally has been our doctor until he retired about 4 years ago, he took care of me since I was a baby. Our whole families went to him, was the one that diagnosed me with anxiety and depression at about 8, 9, and then diagnosed me with bipolar at 18, right? They don't usually like to do that before that age. So when I told her, it was completely like denied. And, you know, her word was bond, even though that was the doctor that she trusted me with since I was a baby. We all, my dad, her, my little sister, and my, like, all of us, you know, this was the doctor that knew everything about our mental health, about the addiction, about everything in my family. And so mental health was very much so ignored. Not that it wasn't aware, no, it was ignored. That's the difference.
Just totally ignored. Not even, I'm surprised she didn't gaslight you with, you know.
Ooh, I go back and I see it, especially in my addiction, you know, and with the BPD that, and even though I actually, the one time the crazy thing is, and you know, I have went to jail, you know, that was a part of, my addiction and my place where I was really lost. I was alone. You know, a lot of things had happened. And so, but being in jail, they do have like mental health and stuff like that. And I actually, we went to, we see a therapist, we go to group. And I actually did see one of the therapists there because they can only do so much, right? They can only do so much medications. But he gave me the, like, a printout about BPD. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of that. And so that was probably about like 2013, other than Girl Interrupted, because I love that movie and I always have, and it's so funny now that I look back at it. I denied it for a long time. I did.
Wow.
Myself.
And even today, I know that you're low contact with your mom.
Oh, no,
correct?
Contact now. The low contact started.
You are completely no.
Yeah,
contact.
Started January 2023, and then I was giving it a year. I mean, you know, in the end, I still gave it till January, and it was at the end of December that we had a conversation. You know, I came and I gave this is the end. You know, it was the first actual conversation that we had had in a while, because as well as deserved, you know, I was angry and I was saying all the truths and I wasn't getting anything back, you know, the ignore game, or you're just doing this, you're just doing that, and the manipulation and things like that. And so I go back and absolutely, I mean, we were gaslit, manipulated, made to think like her. I remember kind of bringing this up to you. So there is a song by Melanie Martinez called Dollhouse.
Yeah.
I've never resonated to a song so much. As me and my little sister are breaking down the brainwashing. And it is. Let's call it out for what it is. My reality last year split. It was not a reality. It was a dollhouse. Don't let people see what's really going on. Brush everything, you know, under the carpet, even within your own family, right? Because my stepdad just always disliked who I was, and everything. And, you know, it was, we took pictures every year, right? Every December. We've been doing that for years, but you better smile. You better act like the happy family and keep this dollhouse of, and I love the song, how it says, put on the, you know, the pretty smiles, you know, stand next to your brother, act like you love him, take the picture. If you guys haven't listened to it and you would resonate with basically having to smile and be living in a dollhouse and everything like that's a great song. If you haven't heard it, it truly resonates with exactly what it all was fake, a dollhouse.
Wow. Yeah. I will definitely link that song in the show notes and on the blog for this episode. So what do you think your turning point was when you realized that you were not in reality, in your reality anyway, but that you were a puppet in your mother's reality and in her dollhouse?
When I, you know, the thing is, men have always been chosen over us. That would probably be the biggest thing that affected me and my little sister is her need to always have a man and be pushing men on us and me learning things even that are not okay, you know, even like for me and my father and everything. And so, you know, and the neglect and the discarding, I mean, she admits that she discarded me because my ex-stepdad, I was 12 years old when they had my little sister. I was so mad in the beginning. I was 8 years old when my mom and my dad got divorced. Obviously, they have to do that mandatory therapy. It was like 3 sessions. The guy was terrible. And basically just told me I needed to submit to this, you know, new stepdad that was already in our life, like right after my dad left and was like the babysitter because my mom worked at night. My mom always like had 2 jobs for the longest time. And that's really where it begins. But where it ends is, you know, men, right? The men were always chosen over us no matter what. And we had to just deal with that and everything. Whenever she tells you something or does something, you just accept it. And, or if not, she's just not going to tell you. And then it's just going to happen and you have to accept it. And so when I went low contact January 2023, it was because of her actual like ex-fiance she had just split up with. It was a situation and it just made me realize again, you know, cause it made me realize like I was living with her for a few months after my breakup, and earlier that year, and I had to leave, and it was so sad. My little sister was falling, but I went back. She did the same thing, you know, when she, this, her and a man were having issues. So I left, and that's when I really realized. And so I went and seen her. It was more low contact. You know, I need time to heal. We went over everything. Of course, it's, you know, the apologies, but the non-apologies. But I mean, admitting some things, you know, yeah, I was discarded because she thought she was doing the right thing. You know, and so how it really came to be, and I mean, this is the brainwashing. This had been happening. Weird things had been happening since December, really, of 2023. And that, but it didn't start progressing through the months until, you know, we realized, so my, basically my ex fiance, so her you know, ex son-in-law that I split up with in the summer of, it would have been then, yeah, 2022. And that's why I moved in with her. But I was still letting him raise, you know, our son, because that is his dad. His sperm donor, I like to say, has never been in his life. He hasn't, you know? Thank you for that.
What about my dad?
Did you donate to the cause?
He had... I mean, you had great DNA. You were an asshole, well, but thank you for the DNA.
Like, I always knew I wanted to be a mom. Never seen myself getting married. I never seen that white wedding. I was never that. Funny? Knew I wanted to be a mom.
Yeah. Same. I would have conversations with my friends, and they're like, "I can't wait to get married." I'm like, "I can't wait to have babies."
You're not thinking of it. So funny. All I seen was terrible marriages, terrible divorces. Parents who are numbing in the worst ways, but like, you want to be that mom that you didn't get, you know, because we learn those nurturing skills ourselves, even if it is not healthy, and we can learn healthy skills. But I found that a lot of us with our mothers, a lot of us daughters that have bad relationships with our mothers, you know, I see it so much that we are just growing and trying to be better for our kids. And that is the trauma breakers. We are the trauma breakers, you know? And I would do this all over again for my little sister and him. And that is why I made the choice. But also, finally, you know, so during that time after, my ex, Jason, he is from a different state. And so he didn't really have anybody here. You know, he stayed here because we had gotten together. We worked together for a year before that in the family, you know, as I said. We had bought a house together, you know, it was, we were going to get married, all these things, but there was, he's a narcissist, but in a very, very ugly sociopathic way. And it started coming out after my dad passed away. And I think that's when the light started coming, right? It kind of started coming because it was always, I was always meant to think it was my dad. My dad, because he was the alcoholic, because he was withdrawn. He went through a lot. He was in Vietnam. He was adopted by abusive parents. He was never taught love. Mm-hmm. He saw ugly. And when him and my mom split up, it was just, he couldn't handle it. And so.
Is that the narrative that your mom painted or the narrative that you saw?
That she painted for a long time. Absolutely. I mean, he did not want to take us at first. He didn't want to even do weekends, but I know it's because he was very much in his alcoholism, and I had to see that at an ugly age. She should have never had me being there. He was withdrawn. He was intoxicated all the time. Everything. I even wrote him a letter at 9 and put it in his car. I believe it was my sister who found it, maybe gave it to my mom or something, asking him at 9 years old to please be with me and stop drinking and stop hiding in his room. I mean, you know, I only had a few friends come over, right? There was empty 30 packs, empty cigarettes everywhere, you know, dishes not done, old milk that my friend accidentally drank. But like, these were like two friends that we understood each other, though, because honestly, at that time, all of our parents were toxic, so at least the ones that we lived with. And I brought this up to her, and she's like, well, I didn't know any of that. I'm like, the fact that you knew about him, though, and you thought that was a good environment, and I was the caretaker. I was always the caretaker from 15 on, like absolute caretaker. And I, you know, but in the end, my dad was the biggest blessing for me and my son. And we got the best years of him, and he was clean. And he got his mental health together, and he took care of my son for 3 years. 3 years when I couldn't do it.
Oh.
So what really opened my eyes was when me and my little sister were really noticing, you know, she lost the control. She was losing control. I finally was going low contact. I told her with me and with Ryder, you know, my son, we need time. I need time. I don't know with Ryder yet, but it never got better. It just kept getting worse. So things got put.
Yeah. Well, once they feel you withdraw.
Well, and that's because once they're pushed in a corner and they don't feel like they have the control anymore, and that she realized, and he realized that was slipping. you know, they were like, oh, these two, they act like they're my parents. Right. Well, that makes sense, right? Because the moment I split was the moment that I found out. And absolutely, when my sister and me put it together, or more so, she came over and we'd been talking about a lot of stuff, and she finally said, Afton. Afton. You know they're sleeping together, right? And it's just like
your ex-husband and yes. your mother.
And that was in July, found out, and this had, I don't know when it started, and I don't need to know. It had at least started. They went to a Christmas party. Right. She went to the Christmas party for his work with him, and we were and didn't tell me. And that's kind of like where things really started. And I and it was more like, well, he doesn't have anybody here, you know, la da 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 da. And like, okay, it was weird, right? But then it just became more and more things. So yeah, me and my, you know, she brought that up into my face, and he was there that night to see Ryder, even though I had caught him a few times coming through town and not coming to see Ryder, but going to her place. And so we've just put it all together finally. And it's a very, I mean, you don't want to ever think that, but the moment she said, I knew. And so basically she left for me to confront him, because I knew if I confronted him, he would tell me. And I did. And he was so happy to tell me. Like the grin, just the. And the thing I said was, I, you know, of course, I'm like, jeez. You are so disgusting. How dare you? You will never be in our lives. And I was just like, I was like, oh my God. I was like, what would your mother think? And he got up with a smirk and he says, they already know. There wasn't a camera.
I mean, talk about betrayal from multiple streams.
And he was and abusive.
Knowing the abusive. Yeah, knowing the abusive mother, knowing that you were abused by him, just feeling completely aligned and turned on. I can't imagine. How did you cope through that?
You know, I 2 weeks before that, and I actually called her, I was sexually assaulted. And this was not the first time this happened in my life. Okay. It's just the first time it happened when I was older and when I was sober. Thank you.
Oh, so I appreciate sorry. That.
I'm getting to use my voice, though. I can't say a lot about it, but it is going criminally right now. And so, yeah, it's been a journey. And then I found out about them 2 weeks later. So I really...
Like when it rains, it fucking pours, and you can't fucking like you make really it up. Can't it's make like, shit up, come right?
like,
on.
Me and my little sister are like, does this really happen to people? And you know how TikTok algorithm is. Like me and her both, we'd like put them together, and we'd send them to each other. It's all these people having these things. I'm like, this isn't real. Where's Mari when I needed him? Where is Mari?
And see, look, I almost wish I could like. Change my TikTok feed because like I was sitting next to my daughter the other day and she was like, I'm like, God, I hate my TikTok feed. Like it's so like sometimes you just want to escape it. And she goes, oh, look at my TikTok feed. And it was literally a singing trash can so going down the street. Mine. I was like,
yeah, and I'm just going through cat videos and I changed mine. You just have to go to your settings for your feed and it says reset it.
Yep. Hey God, that's weird. Yeah. I'm gonna follow the trash can. And I'm going to like that fuck real. So yes, all I see is just mind
blowing. I am just like debate talk in my advocacy. I have to sometimes take a break. Breathe.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
I just had to push on. The biggest thing was because of my my assault, I was then obviously like there is in your state, they have, you know, resources. And so I got in with the place that does the thing for women and children and anybody who has been in abusive relationships and then with kids. And so.
Can you share those resources? Make sure you share those resources with me and I will link them. Some of them are different
here, but absolutely rain.org is my favorite to have any resources. I have that linked to my Instagram and I also have it linked to my TikTok. And what, I'm definitely going to post this, and I'm going, I know you're not so much on the TikTok, but I will tag that. And then I'll do like some reels on TikTok and put those yeah. on Instagram and then tag that so it can kind of push both ways. And I'll direct people in the yeah. in the caption Good. To go to your Instagram. I actually did a little short live earlier and okay. had it in the background and was, you know, while I was getting ready. So, yeah, you have a special place yeah. in my heart. And I know not all this is going to be in here. You know, there's like things mm-hmm. that tangents would go on, but to tell this story, it's so rough, you know. I went through mental health, you know, I went through abuse, I went through DV, I went through SA, I went through addiction. And I went through literally having the person that I put on a pedestal was my favorite person. And for people with BPD, that's why, you know, that's why I was, she brainwashed me to be her, and I needed her. Because she needed me too for that feel. But the thing is, when I found out about them, that was the moment I split. I mean, and that was the moment she became not my mother. And I told her that at the end of this year, last year. I said yeah. in December before 2024, I gave it a year, right? And I came very just human to human, right? Talked about even her past and, you know, huh? Phone her, huh?
Phone call? You called yeah. her?
Yeah. I called her.
You called her?
About her. So Whoa. I called her at the end of 2024 or at the beginning. See, oh my gosh. Okay. I called her at the end of 2023 because the beginning of that January is when I said, yes. you know, I'm going to give this year. And I even told her when things were going up, messing up, you know, my little sister was coming to me and we were realizing everything. I told her that she's mine and I'm taking her from you. I get to, you know, I have an injury that has happened that can't talk about the lawsuit very much, but I can say, yes, I'm in a lawsuit and it has, with a very big company, and their property management, and I am physically disabled now, and it will be for the rest of my life. We're looking at so they, you know, honestly, thank you, but that yeah, happened January 13th, and honestly, this year in the most crazy ways, everything's coming together, and I'm okay with everything that's happening because guess what, money was the last control they had. And yeah, I had to go through a very traumatic injury and I'm going through very traumatic things with my brain. I have a TBI. I have to get a brain scan, a lot of scary things, other, you know, that I'm having to face along with this criminal case for my sexual assault.
Along with not having a support system. I mean, that's just normalized with you.
I've done it alone for so long. And yeah. my fiance, in the end, yeah. my fiance and my son and my sister are truly the ones who have kept me going. There was times I, you know, and sometimes, and a lot of people with mental health will get this. We need to talk about these things. It's sometimes hard with my mental health to understand how bad it is with my physical health and have a child that I know I have to live for. But honestly, I've come to the point where now I go through it all again, you know, but I went through those points. People look at BPD so stigmatized, you know, and if we're getting help and we're healing, we can have great lives. We can't, it's done from trauma, repeated trauma throughout, you know, really my whole life, neglect, abuse, you know, brainwashing, manipulating, gaslighting, abusive relationships with men, because that's what I was taught, you know, being discarded to really, I raised myself. And so I know survival mode. I was out of that house. It was my house that me and him got together. I was renting it because we needed to get on our feet and stuff like that. From obviously, you know, losing part of income, he did help with my son. But then when I found out, obviously, I cut them out and everything was taken. The car that I used for my son, the money, the card that I used to take care of Ryder, you know, he got all the receipts and everything. They cut me off of everything, and I'd rather be here struggling every day with him and my fiance and my little sister. Because guess what? My good karma's coming, and we're leaving. And that's when our life really starts.
I'm just so fucking proud of you. Like, our journeys are very similar because it sounds to me like you just had this slow poison, this slow boiling, this slow just killing of yourself mentally and physically. And, you know, most people couldn't survive it. Like, most people, I mean, my husband says to me all the time, because I was where you were, like on food stamps, not getting child support, kicked out of my mom's house, like having nothing. And it's like, what are your choices? You don't have a fucking choice. But, and my husband will hear some of these stories and be like, or like, my heart will break for someone who's hurting and still struggling and in the trenches. And my husband will say, he'll be like, not everyone is as strong as you are. And I want you to know that yeah. Not everyone is as strong as you are. You are an incredible human and such a beautiful example of the phoenix just rising from your ashes and saying, fuck off, fuck everyone. And look at you. Like, I am so fucking proud of you. And it's not done. Like, you're still on your journey. This no contact journey is forever. Forever.
My son is okay to come to me and talk about those things, about his dad, you know, bring up memories. And, you know, and he's so comfortable to be honest and everything like that about not wanting to talk to either of them. He understands, you know, and things like that. But we have him through therapy. This kid, I'm healing with him. And he shows me every day that he can be honest with me. And he understands his emotions. And he loves everything about him, from our neurodivergency that I was shaped for and never had the help until I finally decided to take over. And like you said, that was the shedding finally. And I think my dad, he's been with me this whole time. Losing him opened my eyes. And even they would say I would take it the hardest with him, because I went through so much at such a young age, and I was the one who was there and taking care of him and doing everything and going through the worst. And it has been, but you know what? It's been transformative. My fiance, their last name is my dad's first name.
Yeah, it is. Oh, get out.
So, you know.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's been a journey, but I've shown myself strength, and it's not linear. You know it's not linear, but I know survival mode. We know survival mode. And I was out. I got out.
Yeah. Well, right. Anything kind of survival mode feels weird, you know? I mean, it feels weird to live in that peaceful mode. So I really applaud and I really appreciate what you said about BPD, because my mother actually has BPD. And in fact, when she was diagnosed, she called me and she goes, I think you have it. And I'm like, okay, like maybe I do. Let's take a look and see, because I hate the stigma, the stigma. And also my mother would yell at me and say, oh, you know, you're bipolar, as if it had such a negative connotation. Like, so what? Maybe I am
What's
bipolar.
Wrong
Who cares
that?
If I'm bipolar? Like, why make it so stigmatized? But it makes me so sad. Yes. It makes me so sad because she was diagnosed with NPD. And the difference is, though, the trauma, she couldn't get out of her own way, and she couldn't stop the cycle. And I finally had to take a step back and say, like, I'm sorry, but you can't continue to hurt me. You're not figuring yourself out, you know? But I'm so proud of you for boldly saying, yeah, I have NPD, but the difference is you're learning to grow and you're stopping the toxic generation
from the traits of her. And I have spoken with her, because even I don't like narcissism just being thrown out. And I used to be one of those people, but NPD, ASPD, if you are healing and you are being the best person and being accountable, that's all we can do. But when they don't want to face it, which is the same thing. And I explained that, and she doesn't want to face it, right? Like, she doesn't want to answer the real questions or be real. And she, you know, and that's the thing, is that's sad. And I told her, even, you know, I love you. I'll always love you as the mother that I thought, but you are not my mother. And I'm not Afton. And I explained that to her as Rhea. And she even agreed that I needed to let that little girl go and heal. So it's my time.
And have you been letting that little girl go? Have you been resonating with her?
The 5-year-old, the 8-year-old, the 15-year-old. All of the selves that broke, that the complex trauma, those were all PTSD events. I have a very clouded past, but it's coming through. But the thing is, I go in with her, even during the hardest times, I go in with her, and I'm learning now. We learn how to work together, and we are told to be monsters, and we're not. We have selves and broken parts that were never loved when they should have been, and so we don't understand emotions, but we understand empathy for others, just not for ourselves, and we have no self of identity, and that is because my mother. So now I get to find it, though. And I get to find it through my son. And going in there and being that inner child and going, and you know, the disability part is so hard for me. But I find ways here to, you know, let that those parts of me out, and like my alternative self, finally my 15-year-old heart. Because she brought me down. She wanted us to just be the pretty daughters. And she never liked us, and she never loved us, and she was never my mom.
So you are so incredibly strong. You know, when we face the fact that our mother is not who we wanted. Our mother cannot be our mother any longer. And we cannot have a relationship with our mother. We were ingrained and brainwashed to love her, to honor her, to never leave her. She put that fear in us to never leave her. So what was your thought processes? What self-talk did you have in your brain to tell yourself to not be afraid of your mother,
really, that moment,
and that it was okay to walk away?
That moment when, you know, I mean, it's like, it was already there, you know, the signs were coming out, but the brainwashing, the veil, and I call it the veil, right? The veil, the glass house. The veil was lifting, but I think the brainwashing and the manipulation and the fact that really we don't have family. That's the saddest part, is we don't. And so truly in my family, like our core, who we have is like all my grandparents are gone. On my dad's side, I have one aunt. I mean, he was in Vietnam, right? All those cousins passed away from, you know, either alcoholism, cirrhosis, strokes, like a lot of addiction on both sides. And then on my mother's side, my bio mom's side, we don't have anything either. And so really, it was the fact that I already knew I was the one who had to step up. I was not going to let my son ever think that it's okay the way that she treated me. And then when she was a part of the,
good,
what she did is towards him. He is the main one in the story. And he will have everything, and has seen me go through so much, and is so sweet and so caring of me. Asks me so much, you doing okay? Just to check in. He's so emotionally intelligent. He talks to me very openly now and understands his feelings. And I will always put him first. And I think really realizing that. And then with my little sister, you know, we're 12 years apart, and her coming finally into where I was about a year ago, when this all happened, and she still has to reside with her because she's in college. So what she's going through is, you know, her own stuff, which my, you know, Nettie's like, she shouldn't even care, all these things, you know. She's taking it way out of context when she showed up for the first time to see him there sitting down on the couch. And my mom never told her, and she just got home from work, you know, having to drive in school. Like, just throwing things right on us. And my sister made it very clear for him to get the fuck out of her house. And, like, they just don't get it. They think we're all supposed to be this dollhouse perfect family still. Like, that is the delusion. And that's why you want privacy. You're joking. That's a joke. You're a joke. And that is gone. And I told her at the end of the year, honestly, yep, that I was sorry. And honestly, yep, she even deserves better. I am able to take accountability and be a better person because I understand what my role is. We had to be the sacrificial lambs. I don't know why. And I, like I said,
That you said that.
Like, hi, but honestly, I love my power has come from that. And I think that is where our strength and our power comes from, is when we have to step up. I was the one who had to step up. And finally, the last thing that they thought they had control over was money. They already know they lost it. So staying together was probably the best idea that they should have done. And yeah, so that was the moment that I understood. She never loved us. No mother could do that to somebody they love, and especially their own daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, it was how anger did you process at first. That? So were much you anger. Angry? I scared were her. Somebody scared peaceful? Her. And yeah, you? She should have been. She's lucky. My keys got taken away a few times. It was anger, so much anger, so much. And then it would be anger. And then like, I just wanted to be like, you're done. I don't care. And then it would be sadness. And then it would be grief. And then it would, I felt, it's not linear. It's everywhere. But right now, honestly, the best thing I just feel is I'm working on me. I let her go, you know, and like, we haven't seen each other since. And, you know, she is not my mother. I finally have been able to split that in my brain, but still understand that she was Afton's mother and I'm healing the trauma, but to still let Afton inside have those good memories, right? Not push those away because it was a part of her life. But just go in and hug her during the worst. That's
so beautiful.
Thank you.
That's so beautiful. Wow. Is that how you stay centered on this no contact journey as we, you know, when we have those waves of sadness and we're like, oh, no, but I remember that one time that mom was nice, or two times, listen, because it wasn't all terrible, maybe, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know,
is that what keeps you grounded?
I wanted to shove it all down, but now even though the bad's coming out because my childhood is so diluted, it's like a void. There is good memories that have come out too. And, you know, and so I hold on to those. Camping was a huge thing of that, you know, camping, going to the lakes, a lot of outdoor stuff, you know. And so there is memories and I hold on to them because, yeah, like we can't completely devoid what happened. And yeah, you know, I think I call, so glimmers is what I call them. My psychotherapist is like, I love that. So when we have triggers, right, those are triggers, but we need to hold on to the glimmers, the little lights, the little tiny things, and just enjoy the moments. And I'm really finding that I'm having more glimmers the more that I'm paying attention. And I have finally put out all of what I wanted to do, my energy I wanted to give out, the person I wanted to be, and how this year was going to be. And it's unfolded in not the easiest ways, but it's unfolded that it is setting me up to really finally be the breaker and to take my little sister and my son especially and give them the life that they deserve. Yeah.
Wow. Good for you. Glimmers. I absolutely love your perspective on that. So did your sister always see it? It sounds like she was pretty feisty back in the day? Did she always see it? Or how did you
have to navigate that? I don't talk about it. We have an older sister. She's never been in my little sister, in my little sister's life. You know, we have a difference. My older sister, she's 5.5 years older than me. But she was just never there. Like, she really wasn't. Like, you know, when my parents divorced, I was 8. And so she was a teenager. And then, like, she just left the house quickly, too. And kind of spiraled when, you know, my dad was in his alcoholism. And then she was living with him during those times and kind of spiraled. And so she went on her own journey. But I am no contact with her as well. And there's no need to say anything. I look and she's never done anything for our relationship. It's all been lies. She hasn't been here at all for any of the things that happened. And she she hasn't even known that criminally my case is going, that I've already went to the first appearance. Nothing. Right. And so, you know, it's just the crazy upbringing that my little sister, it's like my mom always wanted to pit us against each other, right? Because she has to have the one worshiping. And, you know, it was really like brought to my eyes one time when she said, and me and my little sister have talked about this now, because mm-hmm. like, we're done. When we leave here, we're done. You know, like, that is not a mother, you know, and like, she's just a human. My little sister can deal with that. She literally goes no contact in her own home. Like, but it is hard, and she comes here and we talk about it. But there, you know, when me and Nettie were talking about it one time, she even said, you were the one I could never stay mad at. But that was the brainwashing. And, you know, and then it was like, Alex, everything was about, you know, that will take that part out. Obviously that fell. Everything was about, you know, my little sister, and in the ways that we didn't see the codependency, right? Until obviously now we're adults, and then obviously like things happening. It was just kind of a domino effect. And I mean, how can you really? She was already seeing things, but then when this happened, it was like, okay, yeah, like how could she ever accept that? She, my mother, seeing the financial, the mental, the emotional abuse, manipulation, but the thing is she was doing the same. So honestly, it doesn't surprise me that this is where they ended, because they lost control of us, and so who else but them? But that's sad. And honestly, I look at it like that, that's sad.
What would you say to the people who yeah, it's tragic. I agree. What would you say to the people who know they see it and they know that they need to leave for their own mental well-being, but they're leaving a sibling behind? And what would you say? What kind of conversations would you encourage the people who need to leave, but are simultaneously leaving siblings behind that maybe they don't see it? Like, what kind of conversations would you encourage them to have with their siblings? Because you also don't want your siblings to feel abandoned, but you also have to protect yourself. The
parent is making them so they can't, you know, and is pushing that so hard. It is hard, you know. I was there a lot for my sister in her growing up years up till like 9, 10. I mean, I took her everywhere, and she was my little sidekick, you know. I had a boyfriend that we literally took her swimming. We talk about this all the time. She's like, that was my favorite person you dated in like high school, because I just remember the good memories, you know? And so then, you know, I went through my addiction and I came out and took my accountability and did all the work, but realizing I was never going to be good enough. And so I'm very proud of myself. And that's, you know, that's what keeps me being better every day too, is just trying to show that I can overcome and do these things for those two. And everything. But yeah, my little sister, you know, when I got clean and I was able to start being around, she was about 15. Yeah. And, you know, of course, my mom wanted me to believe that she was the biggest brat, that like she, you know, of course, like she said about me, you know, I'm the junkie daughter to everybody in the camping group that heard everything about me, but, you know, didn't hear my story. And I ruined their, my ex-stepdad's and my and Nettie's relationship, and yes, that has been told to me throughout my life. that I ended, you know, and so that honestly, it all comes to, and even my little sister, you know, with her dad, like, and it's so funny because we had completely different upbringings. So it was hard, but the advice I would give you is, just keep being there. They are going to, appreciate whatever little things you do when you speak with them. Obviously you don't want to speak bad. I've had to learn this with my son, but just try to have conversations with how things are going, opening up, making sure that they know that they have a voice. I know it's hard. It is so hard. But you cannot save them and you cannot save yourself and be the person that they need that your parents couldn't. And when they realize that, I promise you, you'll have the most beautiful relationship. And it's not always going to be linear. It's not always going to be that same way. You know, I'm 33, you know, she just turned 21. So it's taken a long time. And still, you know, she lives there and we're navigating a lot of hard things, but we heal together now. And, you know, there was one argument that was happened and my little sister ran up to her room and she was crying. And I seen 15-year-old me, and we talked about this one time. I went up to her room and we kind of got into an argument and my mom told me, don't go up there. And I did. And I sat there and I came to her exactly where I knew she was. And we cried. And I said, I'm sensitive too. You know, I love you. Like, I get it. And so that was really, I think, the moment in her teenage years that, we bonded. And so then I was there in and out and stuff like that, you know, things with my dad. I was living with my dad and, but you know, so many, but I was there, you know, and so we built our relationship since then. And then we've really gone through a lot of it together. You know, she brought men into the house with my sister, two men, you know, never asking, never, you know, just the same stuff. And so, and it's always our fault, you know, where she's selfish. You know, and everything, we're both selfish, and everything like that. Yeah. You know, we don't see any of the good. She's just, we all say she's just a bad mother. She's a terrible mother. All the, you know, all the normal things we hear. And, I did the best I could. I'm sorry, but and it doesn't matter the bad, especially when you're not going to own up to it. It doesn't, even if you did, doesn't cancel out the good. And I want to end this. This is my biggest thing. I am an advocate. Okay. I'm an advocate for many things. That's what I am becoming. Right. And I'm so glad to be like starting this journey with you, telling my story. So now this journey, these other journeys as they fall out, but this journey, this is where I've had to really tell my story and let it go in so many ways. And I honestly, it happened at the perfect time. And that's why I've said, you know, we say, oh my gosh, we've been talking for a year and a half and you've been like, you are my older sister. You know, we need to have chosen family, but accountability, that is where the biggest thing with mental health, with family, accountability. Yeah. Hold yourself accountable, hold the people around you accountable, set boundaries and still have the relationship with your siblings and let them learn themselves, but come to them at where they're at. Because if you do, and if you just, yeah, it's beautiful. And you can do so much throughout their lives that when they get to that point,
beautiful.
You know, me and my little sister, we go over so many memories together now and we heal each other. And it's been so beautiful.
Yeah. I love that. And I know because I've lived it, like you just want to rescue. And I love that you said, you know, you can't rescue them. You have to give yourself permission to heal and permission to let things unfold. You know, had you been plucked out too early or had you been told, you know, hey, mom's this or da 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 da, like it wouldn't have gotten into your fiber as much as it has, I believe. You know, you wouldn't be the person you are. So I love that perspective. But we do. We see narcissism and we see the abuse for what it is, and we want to stop it. We want to just save them. But so tell me, yes, I think that's so beautiful. I feel like you have to, because. And let's talk about how difficult it is when they are mirroring
the abusive parent, you know, when they come home and they're, you know, just parroting or mirroring their toxic behavior, and you just want to be like
the same thing you were, you know, having no voice, learning being hurting inside and being silenced and going through things alone. And she was very, she still definitely is. She will tell, like, her face will tell it all. I'm very protective of her though, but she is, you know, she's a beautiful person and she's finding herself and she's loving herself. And we are loving each other through this. And that is what is getting us through. Yeah.
I love that. It's so beautiful. And I'm so glad that in the midst of this tumultuous time for you, that you have that blessing. You have
the glimmer. See, that's like a glimmer. You've got your sister to lean on. Thinking of the life.
I'm so happy. Like, you're rebuilding.
And everything's happening as it needs to, you know. And yeah, I've got a lot to still face, but I'm finding me through it. And healing is ugly, y'all. It is. Let's just be honest. It is ugly, grueling. But there is so much beauty and so much beauty in self-awareness. And it sucks. I wish I could go back. The biggest thing I had to learn was looking at myself and just trying to love myself and find myself. And those are my little things. Self-care. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, but just start by loving yourself.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So to ask you a couple brutally honest questions, what is your self-talk like on a good day?
You know,
how do you talk to yourself on a good day when you wake up, if you have an accomplishment, if you fail?
Question, especially with borderline, like, because it changes so fast, right? That's the problem, is we don't know how to regulate our emotions. That's from trauma, and that is from trauma to the brain as well. And when you are growing, right? So we really actually, chemically, there's trauma that makes us so we can't understand how to say emotions, right? We understand empathy so much, like, and we can be there for anybody, right? I mean, I've been told I should be a therapist so many times through all the therapy I've been through, you know, and everything like that. But when I start getting really down in devaluation these days, I really just keep reminding myself of everything that's happened, but everything that's coming out of it. And I just have to keep reminding myself that to give myself grace on those hard days, let myself have them. Don't try to avoid them. And I have found, you know, music is the best way, because, you know, and so I let music kind of tell me for myself. So, you know, on a good day, most of the time, you know, it's mostly just trying to take things a little bit at a time, but realize I'm facing hard things, but I'm facing it. And that's really just the fact that I take accountability again is a huge thing that I pride myself on.
Yeah. You should. You're doing a great job. All right. So tell me what your self-talk is like on a bad day and how you pull yourself out of that spin, because we've all been there. And it's hard to take yourself out of the spiral. So it's funny. My daughter and I were having a conversation yesterday and she was like, "You think that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've never admitted that to anybody before." She goes, "I've never admitted that to anyone either." Like, and all of a sudden there's like this, like, we're normal.
Yeah, my sister is actually going through a bad day of self-talk. Oh, and like, we just like, the thing is, we love dark humor, right? Like, the thing is, like, we can bring each other back. Normal. It's actually, this was the tattoo that we got together a few years ago. And in this one, so it's the same one. Mine says, "Wherever I go," and her says, "Wherever I go, you bring me home." And it's really funny. Hear that back in. So yeah, hers says, you bring me home. And there's this thing because we love mountains and trees and stuff. And really, honestly, if anybody showed me what home is, it's the people in your life. It is not a house. And so on my bad days, they're bad. I was never taught that I was smart. You know, my ex-stepdad said, well, at least she could take a good picture. Cause I was always told how photogenic I am, how pretty I am, other than when my mom, right? Like during my, when I was really finding myself in my more dark emo alternative side, which really I love about myself. And absolutely, like I was showing in such, trying to show myself, right. And so, anger, rage, you know, really it's a devaluation completely of myself. I don't, you know, they're called splits with BPD, even that's a hard thing, but really, I mean, and anybody deals with this where they just go into a trigger, right? It's like a trigger in a moment and it happens on a dime. And, it goes into, I am the worst person. Yeah. This is my fault. You know, yeah. All I'm worth is my body. I'm never going to be able to take care of my son. You know, he deserves better. Why am I even still here? Yeah. Intrusive thoughts, you know, and we need to be honest about these. And you know, I'm very honest with my therapist. And I'm
so sorry.
Glad these days that you can be honest and they're not just going to put you in a sanitarium.
Yeah.
Because I've learned honesty is what's healing me. Mm-hmm. Honesty. Yes. And that's my biggest thing is honesty.
Right.
Accountability. Healthy. And empathy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing I work on because that's what we didn't have.
Beautiful. I love it. Yeah. I think, so to wrap it up, I think for me, one of my very, very favorite things about you is that you have this inner fire and this inner strength, and you are, I hate that you were told that you're not smart and all you had was your beauty, because you have both. You're beautiful and you are so intelligent, and there's so many things that are so beautiful and wonderful about you. And one of my favorite things about you is you have this innate fire, this innate strength that is so impressive. How do other people bridle that in their lives? How, you know, we've been beaten down. We've been, like you said, all the intrusive thoughts and the real thoughts that actually did come out of our abusive parents' mouths and our toxic family members' mouths. Like, how would someone weak bridle your strength within
them? I've always been called stubborn. And maybe that's it. I've always, you know, I barely graduated by the skin of my teeth. But I definitely got that diploma because my stepdad, I said they'd come by. What, at one point, when I come by, my stepdad said I wouldn't. And so I did, right? Like, but when I want something, I go after it. And, like, it takes me time, right? The biggest thing I can tell you is, like with the bad self-talk, would you tell that to your best friend? Would you tell that to the person closest in your life? And if you wouldn't, don't say it to yourself. We find strength in the weirdest places. And when you think that you can't go on, just know that you are on the horizon of healing. It's never linear. You're going to have to take those moments, and you are just like moment by moment, day by day, but focus on every accomplishment. And that can be anything from if you didn't shower for 3 days because of your depression and you did, congratulations.
Yeah, I love that.
So breaking it down to, we just need to heal, and we don't have to be what other people are. We don't have to be what we don't know anything. We don't have to be what anybody thought that we should be. And we need to be honest about these things and just be honest. Reach out to, you don't need blood family. There is family out there. I found this sister here on Instagram, and it's the weirdest ways, like we said, even social media. But honestly, the closest people in my life I met on social media when I started my journey on TikTok, you know, over a year and a half ago. And I've made it into what I did, and it went through so many journeys. But now it's helped me to debate. It helped me to get some of that anger out, but put it towards like trying to help others. And that's kind of when I realized when everything happened last summer and I took that step back, that was my moment to take myself. But I'm going to tell you, it's so ugly at first. There's literally moments where we are barely making it by and somehow we figure it out. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be rough. Sometimes you have to look into a ton of resources. Look into all the resources that you have in your area, please, and utilize them because it's kind of a game, but you can find people who know resources out there, you know, that can help you, especially in DV situations, SA situations, you know, situations with children. So please, please, that was the one thing that I didn't realize how much help could be out there. And the biggest thing is just keep loving yourself and understand that you don't have to take accountability for anything that was done to you, but we do have to take accountability for who we are today. And so I want to be exactly who she isn't because I've never been her. I'm love and light and she can't be that without me. And that is the best revenge I can ever.
Tell everyone where they can find you and your social handles.
That one is going to be, I believe, hold on, I should have had those ready, but we'll get those. Okay. I'm like, I know what it is, but I'm like, should I say, no, I mean, I'll say it. I'm just spelling it.
I know what it is. Right,
okay, so, the name is.
I'll link it Raya, all. I'll
by the way, R-A-Y-A. Afdaf is in Frank T-Y, and then May. Afdi is my nickname. May is my middle name. Raya, obviously, we talked about that. So there's that. And the handle, this is going to be the same handle for TikTok as well, y'all. Yeah. I did it.
I need to interrupt you real quick. Like, do you know that May is my daughter's middle name?
Like I said, my fiance's last name is literally my dad's first name. Like, you can't make this shit up.
No.
You can't. Okay, so. So Raya after May, again, crazy. Like that, okay, you know, back to your super, just kind of, that's why my name is on there. It's me kind of just accepting my new, you know, the new person that I am becoming, and I love that name, but also holding her there. But this is the best part, y'all, okay? And I take this job very seriously. The handle for my TikTok and my Instagram is the fucking ice queen. The fucking ice queen. So it is spelled... It is spelled. So it is spelled the T-H-E and then the fucking, because we don't want that to, you know, obviously be taken down for that. So the F as in Frank, C-K-N, and then Ice Queen, just as Ice Queen is spelled. So the fucking Ice Queen, fucking is F-K-S-E-K-N. Because... I don't care. Give me a
control. Love it. I wish I could hug you. And I
know a long time ago. Yeah.
No, you shouldn't. No fucks. No fucks. Come here. I missed it. Yeah. I know in my heart that we are going to have an actual.
Listen,
meeting and reunion, and I'm going to be bawling my fucking eyes out when I actually meet you and hug you, and we can
be moving,
break bread.
So there's parts where we're going to visit and stuff together. And Airbnbs, and that's one of the places. So hopefully they wrap this up within the next year and a half, and then we get to meet in real life. And obviously, you are
cannot wait.
You are my sister, and we're still gonna speak and be there for each other. And we're gonna be on this journey together of being honest, telling our stories, and hopefully, hopefully resonating with somebody and giving them the strength, like you said, that some people look at others. I mean, you know, I look at you and feel like, oh my gosh, I remember like, how did she get there? And now, you know, I get the farther you get and everything like that. And it's not a race. It's going to be for the rest of our life, as we said, but just keep going.
So true. So true. Glad you said that. So glad you said that. And I know that everyone who's watching this podcast, you just gained about, I mean, however many people watch this, or I know are going to feel like they just gained a sister as well, because that's just your beautiful, beautiful energy. And I'm just so proud of you.
And I was so honored.
And I love you, and health and healing to you. And thank you so much for sharing your story with me. I'm honored.
Love you.
Love you, girl. Just till next time, friends.